We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Golic and Wingo here with you on ESPN Radio and ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guest joined us on the Cheryl Penzel Performance Line. It's a Friday.
Yes, it is.
But Mike Golic Jr. has decided it's a
Friday.
Hal is distracted. I can see it in his eyes.
I am really struggling right now. I'm not going to lie to you. So
Hal is distracted. I've seen it before, and our next guest will be disgusted.
Yeah. You know what? That's why I'm glad that Laura isn't here in person with us, so she doesn't have to see this. Normally, would love for Laura to be in person with us. Sure. She's awesome. Mm-hmm. Great friend. Yeah. But right now, I feel like seeing this side of me is nothing that anyone needs.
Nope. So let's bring her in, ladies and gentlemen. Our fine friend and ESPN host and reporter, Laura Rutledge. Laura, how are you?
Well, I'm doing well, but now I'm very curious. What is going on here?
Are you anywhere near a television?
Oh. I am, but let me see if I can turn it on. You guys keep going, and
I'm going to need a perspective.
So you go.
We're going to need a perspective on this.
Go ahead and turn it on. She's turning it on. We'll bring her on. We're going to talk some college football and such, but we're also going to do our tale of the tape. Because it is Friday.
It is Friday. We do our tale of the tape, our fictional fight card that goes on every week. We did it when we didn't have live sports back. Obviously, we got dudes like Harold Varner III out here balling right now. It doesn't change the fact that we are now addicted to this. We brought Laura Rutledge on with us in the past, and we threw maybe our most confusing version of this, where we take random topics and people and pit them against each other. We've got a better one to get in now.
But before we do that, Laura.
Oh, my.
Thank you.
So
I have to ask you, is this in any way, shape, or form work-appropriate clothing?
What I can't figure out is if he is wearing pants. Like, the angle that I'm looking at.
Well, that answers the question. If seriously, if Laura just looked at the TV,
I
can't tell if he has anything on below his navel. Yeah. Then maybe the shorts are a little short.
I got to tell you guys, that's exactly what I was going for.
So
Laura, thank you.
I'm on a slight delay here, so you have now crossed your legs to emphasize what's happening, and I can see. Here's the thing. I've had moments in my life where I might have been wearing something a little too short. This is something that happens sometimes to women, usually, but apparently to you as well. And you do the leg cross and the hand there, and you think, okay, maybe I'm covering things up and no one's noticing. You place a paper there. I got to tell you, it's not working, though. I'm on to you.
Laura, his leg cross was the most daring leg cross seen on a picture.
No, don't say it.
Since a certain movie.
I'm just putting it out there.
So
amazing.
We may in the next commercial break have to go get him some sweatpants.
Can we please?
So let's move on.
Please get the tape on the tape.
Well, dear God, you know what we're dealing with now.
Thank you for weighing in on that important issue, Laura. Now, you remember when we brought you on for the tale of the tape and just completely threw a bunch of nonsense at you, right?
Oh, I was so confused. It was my fault, though, not yours.
You'll love this one.
So I think we've got a better one that makes more sense today. It's fictional battles between high school movie characters in a lot of this one. So we've got the awkward division up first right now. The poll is up on our Twitter account, at Golic and Wingo. Want you to take a listen. Here's the first one we've got.
Chapstick, llamas, tater tots, and throwing a pigskin a quarter mile all have one thing in common. Napoleon Dynamite, the Liger drawing, bow staff wielding hothead, lives life with his head in the clouds, indulging in fantasies that most people can't even begin to understand. In reality, he lives with his brother Kip, who spends most of his days chatting with hot babes on the internet, and his uncle Rico, who firmly believes that if Coach had put him in during the fourth quarter, things would have been different. A failure of a campaign manager, despite the brilliant Vote for Pedro slogan, Napoleon's only hope to win back his friends is to do a dance in front of the whole school, which somehow causes Deb to play tetherball with Napoleon, which is apparently a sign of love. That's literally how the movie ends. One thing we can all understand is the financial success of this movie that is unmatched. Made for a mere $400,000, the cult film went on to gross $44.5 million. What's the simple math on that, Golic?
It's a lot.
That is a lot right there. That's a lot of money. Laura, big Napoleon Dynamite fan, I assume?
Love Napoleon Dynamite. Also am a regular user of Napoleon Dynamite GIFs or GIFs, depending
yes.
on
yes.
how you decide to say that word.
Love that. Love it's it. One of those movies I think the more you watch it, the more you appreciate it. But he's got some stiff competition, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Let's see who's up next.
One movie gave us three words that became a revolution. I am McLovin. Yes, just McLovin. No first name. And he's an organ donor. Chicka, chicka, yeah. According to his ID, he's from Hawaii and was born on June 3rd, 1981. And I've got to be honest, if my real name was Fogel, I would have been that desperate for a change too. After receiving rave reviews from friends on his choice of fake ID, such as, one name, who are you, Seal? And that his name sounds like an Irish R&B singer, McLovin convinces those friends that his decision to put his age at 25 years old instead of 21 was pure strategy. It gets the goods, a swift punch in the face, the thong or girl of his dreams, a few friends in law enforcement, and a wild night no one would soon forget. Last week was McLovin's birthday, and if his age on the fake ID rang true, he turned 38. But McLovin is truly ageless. His youthful exuberance continues to shine through, brighter than a piece of gold in a bottle of Gold Slick vodka. Take a drink! Take a drink!
Oh, that is awesome. That is a matchup. Napoleon Dynamite against McLovin.
We needed that.
Oh my gosh.
We needed that matchup.
Laura, which way are you going in that one? I gotta ask. You get to cast your vote on air for this.
Well, I just voted online as well, guys, because I like to vote in these things. I am going McLovin all the way.
Boom.
I love Napoleon. McLovin. You yeah. did. Okay.
I did. Listen, ooh. I love both. This is one of those I could go either way.
So what we can say is, Laura, you're McLovin it.
I'm loving it.
All right. Laura, you don't have to laugh at that. I'm sorry.
We're going to move on to actual conversation. So everybody, again, at Golica Wingo, get the vote. It's a very close vote right now.
Very.
You have about 15 minutes left on this one. We have a couple of more rounds after it. All right, Laura, let's jump to college first. We saw three more Alabama players testing positive for the virus. Again, they were asymptomatic, but tested positive. So that's 8 Alabama players. We have seen multiple other schools with multiple other either players or people with the staff. Do we think this is leading to any kind of a problem? It's not getting any kind of real news nationally. Do we think this could lead to something bad for college football?
Yeah, goodness. I mean, if this had happened a month ago, it would probably be very talked about. It would probably be something that everyone was very concerned about. I think the reason why you don't see as much concern, aside from just other things that are going on in the world right now, but one of the main things is that they did have all this protocol in place to where when this happened, they knew it was going to happen. They knew that people would either test positive even before they got back on campus, which has happened, or then even continually as they give these tests out almost daily. I mean, they're doing it all the time. They would have some people that would end up testing positive, might be asymptomatic. So it was more about making sure that their plan would limit spread. And I think that everybody that I've talked to in a variety of these schools, I've reached out, you know, when it comes out that they've got some people that have tested positive, there are even probably a lot more that we don't know about, right? Because some of this gets very dicey. We're talking about some of the privacy that's involved with HIPAA and some of the things they have to do to just protect these guys' privacy in general. And so I think there's probably a lot more that we don't know about. But what everybody tells me is that this is why they made these plans to where they can quarantine players if needed, to where, you know, they're testing so regularly, they're doing temperature checks so regularly, they're encouraging wearing masks for everybody. In fact, it's mandatory in most of these football facilities. I think it's going to continue to show that sports can come back with these safety precautions in place, at least as it relates to keeping athletes and coaches safe. And the whole fan idea of this is a whole different thing, but I do think that this will continue to be, you know, steps in the right direction for that. And then now we're about to see hopefully the NBA go down that path and watch how they manage everything.
Yeah, and I think it's been interesting, Laura, watching all these sports and specifically college football, because we've talked to so many coaches and ADs and they seem to be very, very buttoned up on the testing side of things. But the one question that we had was about, all right, the resumption of play, because football is not a socially distant sport. Yesterday, the NCAA Football Oversight Committee released a set of guidelines to kind of help ramp back up to that preseason. And I'm curious, because one of the things Nick Saban mentioned at the beginning of all this was a desire for some potential OTA-like workouts, and it seems like that's going to be part of the rollout. Have you heard much reaction from coaches on this portion of it that seems to lead back to on-field football now?
Yeah, initially it was, you know, Jimbo Fisher saying, well, goodness, I'm going to need 6 weeks with my team. You know, Lincoln Riley saying, let's push it as far as we can. I mean, you guys know, because you had a lot of these coaches and ADs on your show, that it was all over the map. I think they're at the point now where they're coming to a conclusion. And that Football Oversight Committee, as you guys know, is comprised of a lot of different decision makers all across college football. So they're at the point now where they're saying, how can we do this to the best of our ability? I think one of the things that allowed for them to get to the point where they felt like an OTA-like situation would make sense is that they can, in most of these places, some are a little bit further behind on purpose, but in most of these places, they've got at least their players back on campus and players that want to participate in workouts are at least back there. That gives everyone, you know, these football coaches that need their control over what's happening, that gives them a little bit more relaxation, I think, as far as their ideas about what's coming up with the season and not knowing what's going to happen. And keep in mind, too, I mean, the coaches still can't be around them. So it's really just the strength and conditioning guys. But I think just knowing that that step's been in place has allowed for them to feel a little bit better about maybe an OTA type situation. I think that's what will happen.
Laura Rutledge with us this morning talking about college athletics and how they're dealing with positive tests for COVID-19. The other thing, Laura, that everybody is being asked to talk about is people's reaction to what has gone across this country in the killing of George Floyd, the reaction to it, and the spotlight it's put on social injustice and how people of color have been treated differently. And whether it was fair or unfair, a lot of people wanted to hear a bunch from Dabo Swinney, Clemson head coach, because he is the predominant voice in college football right now with the success he's had, basically appearing in the national championship game every year over the last few years and winning a couple of them at the expense of Alabama. And some people didn't think Dabo was forthcoming enough or didn't say the right things at the right time. I want you to listen to what Trevor Lawrence, his quarterback, had to say when talking about his head coach.
He's shown an effort to learn, and I think similar to my situation, like I've had a lot to learn, and it's been cool to learn from all these guys in here, but also the whole team. We had our meeting a few days ago, and I learned a lot from them too. And I think with Coach Sweeney, it's for people that don't know him, to the public eye, something it's easy to judge some things that he does, but for I think the biggest testament to who he is the people that are around him every day, his family, all of his teams that he's ever had, and just I think the glowing views of what we have on him and the person he is. And he's proven that every day that we've been around him, that, you know, he's genuine and we trust him, and he's been behind us this whole time. And I think, you know, sometimes from the outside looking in, it's a little easier to judge some of the things he does because you don't really have that relationship with him. But we fully support him, and he fully supports us.
It's been interesting, Laura, so in light of that and seeing maybe specifically in Clemson, have you been a bit surprised by the reaction to a college coach that I think for a long time a lot of people felt like they knew and had a handle on exactly what he was about?
Yeah, you know, it has been surprising, guys, and I've covered Dabo Swinney for years, and I feel like right now, as we continue to go through so many stages of learning here, especially as white people, which Dabo is a white person, you know, just extending grace, I feel like, seems to be a mantra that maybe would be helpful in all this. I feel like as it relates to the statements. So many people were just expecting statements just immediately, very quickly, and people were racing to try and find out what they could say and how they could express how much this injustice affected them and how horrible it was what happened to George Floyd and continues to happen with police brutality toward black people. And I think that became this thing where everyone was kind of keeping tabs on everyone. And Dabo somehow fell behind in that and then hasn't said enough. And so, you know, however you look at that, I do think it's been a little surprising with some of the outrage against him. But then again, I also understand from many sides of this that I don't understand. And so that would be, I think, important in all this too. There's this peaceful protest that's organized at Clemson that'll happen sometime around 6 p.m. tomorrow. And I think that's going to be important for Dabo. I think he needs to speak there and I expect him to speak. And I think people will really pay attention to what he says. And what he says there, I think will probably has the potential to change the way that he's been viewed this entire time and that maybe can correct some of the people that think that he's not saying enough or maybe will influence how people look at him if he doesn't say enough. So I think that's an important moment, and I'm willing to sit here and extend some grace and let him have his moment there and say what needs to be said. I would also just point out, guys, I've been so impressed by Trevor Lawrence, and as a young man, he's the face of college football. He is somebody that's been associated with this greatness on the field, but I think you're really seeing who he is. You're seeing his heart. You're seeing how much he cares about his black teammates and about his teammates in general, but most importantly, his black teammates. And I've been really impressed by him.
So along those lines, as we're talking to Laura Rutledge here on Golic and Wingo, we have heard NFL players say, like someone like Adrian Peterson said, I plan to kneel again in the anthem, or will there be maybe some other protests? We've heard James White from the Patriots say 17 players knelt in September, I think, of 2017, and there may be more peaceful protests these kind of protests here. Do you think, Laura, this gets to the college level? Do you think college players may do this at their games?
I absolutely do. And I think that they should be fully supported in that. And I think they will be. I think that this is going to be more of what we see than less of what we see, for lack of a better way to put it. And I think you've seen already a major change in the way that NFL owners and the NFL in general would look at this. And so I think that sets a tone for college football as well. And look, I mean, the way that the NFL is run and the fact that, you know, Roger Goodell is in a situation where he's reporting to these owners, and it's just a little smaller with how they can do things. The NCAA doesn't have a lot of control over what's going on. So there's not even really this like governing body that could come down and say, oh no, college football, you can't do that. And they just won't. And I believe that these coaches will allow their players to peacefully protest and to make demonstrations however they want to, and they should.
Laura Rutledge with us this morning. Laura, thank you for your insights. Thank you for putting up with our shenanigans. And thank you most importantly for shaming Junior into realizing he should not be on television.
Turn off the TV now.
You know what I have to say really fast is, did Junior stand up and do the arm length test? Because, you know, you're supposed to see if your arms
go
down to the, like, you know, if your arms go below your shorts, then we've really got a problem.
Oh, no, they don't.
You know what? You know,
I think it's the way he was sitting. Okay.
Yeah. Now your stomach's
shot.
No. Oh, my God.
There are other things that are being highlighted
Laura,
now.
What did you do?
Yes.
Laura, it was all working. You were with us, and then you did that.
Oh, no.
My master plan. McLovin' it.
Thank you.
Well done, Laura.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
All right, Laura,
thanks, Laura.
Get out of here. We'll see you later.
Oh, my shorts are stuck up really high now.
I can't
do anything about it. This is basically like a Speedo at this point now. I am locked into this.
That would be a triple size Speedo.
I'm not going to lie.
Because you were fine with the arm length thing. I didn't know.
It's the way they bunched up when he sat on the chair.
I've heard of the arm length thing before because, you know, I went to a Catholic high school, so part of the girls' uniform was they would wear skirts and a button-down shirt. Boys would wear button-down shirts, slacks, and all that.
I'm pretty sure he saw you dress for high school every day.
Yeah, no, I would say, but I wasn't wearing the skirt at the
time.
Really now
explaining it to me.
Yeah. The skirt's kind of a new addition.
So,
in my life here.
So that was the thing, that arm, okay, you had plenty of room until you hiked up your shorts.
Well, and like again, like strategical error, because I sat down and I'm, you know, I got the hip flexibility to cross the old legs here, but now it's pulling on some places that have made this a bit more of a precarious situation.
I was trying to tell you that when you were doing that.
Yeah, no,
you were,
just
right in my face with it.
Listen, I got caught up. Like, I looked down and got caught up in my own sex appeal for a second. I got great legs. Like, for all the people, the chicken leg comments, I'm sorry. I got great legs. I have gotten that review from more than a number of people. So I don't need your hate. I don't need your slander. Wow. Look good.
Listen,
the pugs agree.
The pugs. I will say the pugs find you delicious.
They're not the only ones.
Sadly for you, they are.
Here's the thing. we're caught in that awkward scenario of we can't really start talking about something new. Yeah. I want to get the hell off talking about his leg. So again, it's McLovin against Napoleon Dynamite in our high school movie.
Awkward teenage, awkward division.
Right, it's a high school movie and we're in the awkward division.
Speaking of awkward, I mean, this is perfect for this segment. There.
I feel like Napoleon Dynamite's a movie that uniquely would appreciate the shorter shorts.
Who are you voting for this?
Oh, I'd go McLovin. Look, in a way, you know how some people don't like The Office because they just can't stand how uncomfortable Michael Scott is?
Oh, wait, so you want to hear my Office take? Oh,
right.
So man. I just finished watching The Office, actually, Trey.
Yeah.
And I got to say, this was my takeaway. The Office was very good, but it's the In-N-Out Burger of shows, meaning what everyone tried to sell me in the hype and what I ended up buying are two very different things.
I hate you.
It's a very good show. It's not what y'all made it out to be. Like,
who's y'all?
Like, the general population that screams, like, The Office's contribution to GIF and meme culture might surpass its contribution to TV culture.
No, this show is really good.
Why I hate you for this is because...
It's a good show, but, like, honestly, like, y'all need to stop breathing its name in the same breath as Parks and Rec.
All right, now, I do like Parks and Rec better, but... Through your analogy there, you said In-N-Out Burger was overrated. No, it's not.
It is. No. I'd say In-N-Out is like 65% hype. It's very good. It's very good at the price point, but it's a lot of hype creation.
I don't want to be on the show anymore today.
Well,
you sure you don't?
You'd have to leave your own house, which would be devastating.
You want to leave all this?
But the point I was making, like Napoleon Dynamite is just so awkward, kind of like Michael Scott in The Office. Like this entire segment.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr. It's time for the music. Queen, another one bites the dust. That bites, sound bites. That's what we call them in the business. The best and the worst of what we heard this week. And a lot of the worst came from our own mouths.
We call them in the business.
In the biz.
And no one else calls it sound bites?
In the biz. Well, in the business.
The biz?
In the biz.
Strictly in the biz.
Well, oh, God. Where else outside of media do you hear someone say, hey, play that sound bite?
I didn't, like, anywhere.
Okay. Where?
Life?
Okay, where in life outside of talking in the media do you hear someone say sound bite?
The world.
Where?
Can we be done?
Thank you. Right. He has no fallback position to it.
Because everyone does it.
No one does it except people in the biz.
Golf started this weekend, and the PGA Tour introduced a new starter on their Twitter account. The starting quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Here's Aaron Rodgers announcing Max Homa to the tee.
Now on the first tee, please welcome a man usually seen donning a mustache that allows his friends to make fun of him endlessly, his wife to give him the cold shoulder at nighttime, and his best friend and dog, Scotty, to refuse a walk. A one-time winner on the PGA Tour, avid amateur Scrabble player, occasional podcaster, and all-time Twitter troll. From Valencia, California, Max Homa!
I'm here for more of this.
It's a guy I do love it. We've had, the Start Your Engines for the NASCAR. Yeah. By the way, the beard Aaron Rodgers was sporting.
He's still in Game of Thrones.
Oh, my gosh.
Burying the lead on that one. This is all about the Luke for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, it was. I'm here for the PGA Tour doing more of this.
I agree.
It was fun.
Is that you just wanting to throw your hat in the ring?
I'm just saying. I'm here.
That a baby. Meanwhile, Carson Wentz and Devin McCourty were having a serious conversation on the Greenlight podcast when Michael Bennett decided to derail everything. Take a listen.
And there's no doubt for a white player, I look at the Carson Wentz situation, somebody I always knew had it in him. Like, we know Carson's, like, if you play with Carson, he's a good guy. But you don't know if he has the intestinal fortitude to be that first one to step over the
league. Nick Foles is better.
He said Nick Foles is better.
Yes. Keep going.
Well, see, as a sidebar, it seems like it kind of matters the team you're on, too, because it didn't go as well in Jacksonville.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying.
You're the worst. We're trying to have a serious conversation. You want to divide Philly in half. I love both those. Let me both sides that. How about that?
Big week for the Greenlight Podcast. Second time it's been mentioned on the show.
Yeah, how about it?
Shout out to Chris Long, Greenlight Podcast. Check it out.
Michael Bennett just lobbing one in there. Huh?
I love it. Just dropping little grenades and then leaving. The Stugatz is strong in Michael Bennett.
How do you continue the conversation you were having when he throws in something like that? That's hit the brakes.
Speaking of throwing something in, how about a shout out from our friends at Bassmasters on ESPN2?
Got a note from Mike Golic during Golic and Wingo. They were watching the footage of Zaldane earlier this morning.
Weren't they supposed to be working?
Oh, I think you and I have hung around Golic enough.
Okay, all right.
Well, take in a little bit of fishing here and there.
Hey, when you have your name on this show, you can talk about whatever you want.
Exactly. He said, wow, big worms offshore, like it.
Oh, yeah. My man, Mark Zona, he and I have been friends for years. You've been too, Mike, fishing with him. He's unbelievable. He's a fantastic guy, great fisherman. His sons are unbelievable. And the Bassmaster Elite Classic going on right now in Alabama.
He acts like this show's hard to do. We were watching Korea exactly Baseball right. Organization during the show 90% of the time anyway.
It is hard to do when those are in front of you, those turkey legs.
It's called multitasking, man. We can all do it. Zona, I know you've done it. Believe me. I know you've done
my fine thigh cakes out here. Speaking of thigh cakes, no way, shape, or form. Now, there's a lot to get to from our show this week. First, father like son, my CTSY moment here on the show. It's INFLCR is a firm hired by Duke, released a case study last month in conjunction with the school that says individual Duke men's basketball players could have made collectively $1.3 million through branded posts on their social media accounts during the 2019-2020 season if name, image, and likeness would have allowed. In fact, former star Cassius Stanley would have been worth more than $400,000 in ad dollars alone.
Yeah, it's a company called Influencer is what it is.
That's
Influencer.
How old did I? That was my CTSY moment.
CTSY.
That's something I would have done.
That was my CTSY moment right there.
That's Influencer, yeah.
NFLCRU.
That one's a lot less commonly known than CTSY in the biz.
Hello, Apple. I am Tree.
Not far has he fallen, ladies and gentlemen.
And I have fallen hard.
And then there's Senior.
I tried.
We had to give credit for not taking the easy way out here and trying to pronounce one of the biggest names in sports.
Connor said he laid out a plan of where he thinks it should go with him fighting, and you know Dana White basically didn't listen to it. He wanted to fight Justin Gaethje now, and before Gaethje fought Nurmagomedov.
Khabib,
thank you. And I said it many times, Nurmagomedov. I said it many times. I always want to say it. Well, we've had fun with me and Mike. Trey, it's your turn.
Okay.
Let's hear from Trey.
The whole incident came out with Danny Perriman when a former wide receiver, Kenyon Tuttle, put it out there on Twitter. And he also, that receiver once said, Dabo.
Oh.
I've forgotten that.
Daddy.
Let's quickly get it. Comes full circle when Junior once again, he is the star of the That Bites.
President Dana White told ESPN's First Take on Tuesday that his mysterious fight island is located on Yas Island in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. The island will help the company promote. What did I say?
Emirates.
NFLCER. That's what you said.
Emirates.
That's what I said.
No,
you said Emirates.
Well, not only did he get the Emirates, he got the first thing wrong, too. Abu Dhabi, I think, is what you said.
I'm so glad it's Friday.
Abu Dhabi do.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day. What a show. What a time.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Dominic, I saw on social media yesterday, and I want to play the clip again just to get you back in that mode, because you obviously loved, like we did, what our colleague Ryan McGee had to say on First Take yesterday, talking about the Confederate flags removal in NASCAR. I'm going to give you just a bit of it here because I want to get you back in that mode before we talk about it. Here was Ryan McGee yesterday on First Take.
If there was any honor left in those stars and bars when the Civil War ended in 1865, if there was any honor left in that thing, it was wrung out of that flag by those who flew it over burn crosses and those who flew it over lynched black Americans and those who flew it while they were throwing tomatoes at little girls trying to go to desegregated schools. If there was any honor left in that flag, it disappeared a long time ago. And if you want to see it, I can recommend a lot of great museums, and we can go have that conversation, but we are not going to have it at the Talladega Superspeedway.
Now, Dominic, I really hope you're still there and that we didn't lose you again after taking 30 seconds of your time to play another white person talking, but when you were on First Take vigorously nodding when you heard that. I mean, Ryan about summed it up better than any of us ever could.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I'm being completely honest with you. All I could hear was you breathing, but I hope the people listening could hear the clip. I remember the clip. I listened to it 13 times yesterday, so I don't need to hear it again. I thought it was awesome because he made the point that the flag has come to represent so many other things, and that whatever honor, that part really spoke to me, because it's hard to explain, I think, to people who don't understand what that flag, how defending that flag feels, how listening to anyone try to defend that flag feels when you've seen it used and you see it waving in the background of so many horrific images in the history of our country. So I thought he did it incredibly well, and there's so many things that I think sound different coming from different people. So like when black people are talking about their experience, obviously it hits a little harder if it's coming from a black person. But if you hear a white person from the South who is descended from slave owners talk about that flag in that way, I think it hits much harder than anything I could say.
So Dominique, at this point, there's so much talk about actionable moves, and we saw it with NASCAR removing the Confederate flag. Now we see the NFL donating their $250 million over 10 years, to which some immediately said, well, that's easy because it's a $15 billion a year business. And again, right, money is always good to go to something. But then is it in your mind, what do you think of that, and then where the next actionable step should be?
Yeah, I'm not going to kind of turn my nose up at $250 million over right. 10 years. I think it's fair for people to point out that it's less than $1 million per owner per year, but it's still real money that can have some impact. But I think it feels like to me like they're trying to buy their way out of this obligation. They're a little different than many other companies that are putting out statements, because they were like actively on the wrong side of this. So I need words from them. I need to hear from the owners on how they feel about this, and the money that they're throwing at it. I'm not going to say that it's not enough, but it depends on what they think that they are buying, but I don't think they've bought themselves the ability to stay silent. And giving up money is different than giving up power, and it doesn't seem that that group is interested in changing the power dynamics from GM coaches to even up into ownership. So I think it's a significant amount of money, but I don't think it's the end for them, and it certainly shouldn't be. I hope they don't think it is.
In a remarkable turn of events, Dominic Foxworth still with us for more than a minute now. We're very excited about that. And then, Dom, there was the conversation from Pete Carroll, Dominic, that came out this week on Seahawks.com when he was trying to explain why they didn't sign Colin Kaepernick back in 2018. And look, it's easy to come out and say all this stuff now. I don't remember hearing a lot of that happen when they decided not to sign him back then. But the other thing that I found interesting is he said a team called him this week and actually had interest in Colin Kaepernick. What did you make of that?
Yeah, it's hard to make anything of it. Like, I didn't need Pete Carroll to come out and say give us a confusing explanation for why they didn't sign him. Like, it was confusing for all of us why he wasn't in the league. Anyone who followed football, I guess it wasn't confusing. We knew why he wasn't in the league, and we knew it wasn't because of his ability. But I do think that some teams will show, like, renewed interest. But honestly, I'm not that optimistic that he'll land anywhere. It's still going to take some bit of courage from some team to bring him in. And we all know how football coaches think about anything that they would deem a distraction. So having Colin Kaepernick, which he'd come in as a backup in most situations right now, having him come in as a backup quarterback and to garner the amount of attention that he'll garner, I still think that there's not a team that would there are very few teams that would be comfortable with bringing him in. The Seahawks is one example, but it seems like that is not necessarily a good landing spot anymore.
Dominique, do you think that, especially after what we saw, I mean, Drew Brees got his cage rattled pretty hard in all of this. Everyone seems to, and as you've pointed out, the white quarterbacks speak up in a lot of this, the protected class of players there. Is there anything that feels different about this time where you think there might be more follow-through to this, especially from that group?
Oh, it absolutely feels different to me. Like, I've never been in this world where it feels like America cares what, like, it feels like America genuinely cares what black people have to say, and it feels like America believes the things that black people are saying their experiences, and I've never felt that before in my life. Like, I hope that it does lead to something different, but I've never felt this way before, so it makes me feel like there is something different going forward. So I'm optimistic, I guess, in a way that I haven't been in the past.
Dominique, let's actually talk football on the field for a moment, especially training for football. You got in the league, I believe, in 2005, where, you know, off-season programs, you got to be with your teammates, the strength coach, and kind of prepare, get a little time off, and then go to camp. We're seeing now that it looks like players won't see coaches and vice versa till July 28th. So this is really old school, where it is on the player to basically prepare themselves for training camp and show up ready to go. How difficult do you think that will be for players who are not used to that way of going about that business?
Right. I mean, I think we can go back to the most recent lockout as the example of kind of having that type of separation. But I don't think we were – I think we had we just dropped camp, if I remember correctly, just before camp. And it was a tough situation because obviously everyone was on different tracks. But I think about it as an opportunity, honestly, for players who do have the discipline and are responsible enough, because there are going to be a good percentage of players who don't know how to prepare for a season. The younger guys could be in that situation, and there will be some older guys too who I think don't have the willpower or self-control to get themselves right for a season without a coach standing over their shoulder. So I think it's going to be an opportunity for the guys who have been ready. And I know a lot of us think that the young guys – or it's reasonable to believe that the young guys will have a lot of trouble with this, but a lot of rookies are just coming off of combine training and probably stayed in those areas. So a lot of those guys may be in the best shape of their lives. I know I was coming out of 2005 was the 2005 was the best shape I'd ever been in, just getting ready for the combine. So some of those guys might have a lag in learning offense and defense, but they should be in pretty good condition.
Dominique, when were you with the Ravens again?
Like 2009, 10, and 11, I think.
Okay, so what did you make of, I don't know if you heard him, John Harbaugh's comments basically saying he finds the rules that the NFL has in place right now for the virus humanly impossible when it comes to playing football.
Yeah, I think he's right. I played for him. He's a very good coach, obviously, and I think he's right. It's going to be hard to, and we don't understand virus fully yet, as much as we want to pretend like we're in control. Trusting NFL teams to protect their players and trusting players who their living is based on them, like, throwing their body into harm's way and kind of fearlessly taking some level of risk, like, to trust them to protect themselves is going to be hard. So there will be positive tests in all sports. There will be positive tests, and we got to hope that that doesn't lead to an entire team getting infected and their families getting infected any kind of long-term damage happening to any of those players. But I think he's absolutely right. It's impossible to effectively practice and play football and also be 6 feet apart execute real social distancing. Like, you can't really do that. I've never seen anybody set a block from that far away.
No, it's pretty difficult. I've tried and usually failed, and that's why I get so many sacks. So Dominic Foxworth, listen to this. And Dominic, you were president of the NFLPA. You were the COO of the NBAPA. And so your understanding of labor relations and negotiations and the things that goes into that, it far surpasses any of ours. And I've been curious, and I've wanted to ask you about this. Major League Baseball and what they're going through right now, their union has traditionally had a ton of strength and leverage, obviously no revenue split, no salary cap, and all those things that I'd imagine look pretty advantageous from the outside looking in. As you've seen what's gone on with Major League Baseball right now and the argument and the stance that the Players Association has taken, that we're not taking anything less than our prorated salary for those games, we'll never concede to a revenue split, even amidst all this pandemic, when you look at that situation, do you think that they're right for holding as strong to that during all of this as any other time?
Yeah, I absolutely think they're right. I know that it won't be well received necessarily, but I think they are right. It's interesting to me that a business would expect their employees to be partners in this time and not necessarily be partners with them in the good time. So I've talked about this a bunch lately, and I think the franchise values for major league teams has gone up 300% in the last 10 years, while the salaries for players have gone up 30% in the last 10 years. So if we were really partners, then the salaries would have gone up 300% also. So I don't understand why all of a sudden we're partners and the players need to take a pay cut in order to invest in the future of the game. They're not going to own the game in the future. They're not going to own their positions in the future. They are employees for a determined amount of time, whereas a finite amount of time, whereas the owners own their teams into perpetuity. And I promise you, that those teams are going to be all right because they are a legal monopoly, and monopolies normally do good in business. Even when there's a financial downturn, they're going to bounce back. As long as people want to watch pro sports, baseball is going to be all right in America. So I'm not even sure that they should take the prorated salaries, but I know that no one wants to hear that from me or any athlete. But you can't say that I have the most experience when your dad went through a strike. Like he's a real OG in his labor life.
Well, I appreciate that, Dominic, very much. And it was not fun getting no checks. Sure. and then to have the millionaire stars cross the picket line. It really go our way.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
That's a great time. Yeah,
Dominic, thanks for hanging with us with our technical difficulties. I blame it all on the blazing white thigh meat of Mike Golick Jr.'s legs. It's just been such a distraction all morning. It's not even worth going over again.
Thanks, Dominic.
Golick and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's very interesting where that went.
You'll love the show. You ready? Everything has nuance. Nothing happens in black and white. See, Bubba's going to hate me again, but I think there's nuance here. You guys have to embrace the nuance in life. Oh, wait, hold on. There's two questions there. Life is not black and white. It's mostly gray.
Just answer the question.
No. Well, which one do you want me to answer?
You're shoving it.
No, you're loving that. You're loving the statement.
You love it or shove it. It's a statement, and then you love it or shove it. This is the first time playing.
No, it's not, and it should probably be the last time playing.
You missing basketball? Tune in tomorrow night for an NBA classic. Game 2 of the 2011 NBA Finals between the Mavs and the Heat, presented by AutoZone. Coverage begins at 8 Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you. Glad you're with us. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Although that has been anything but certain this morning. So you know what? We're going to give it another go. You guys ready to bring someone else to play a little game? Bubba, are you there?
I am here.
Hey!
Yes!
We are delighted to hear you crystal clear. So you want to play a little love it or shove it, Bubba?
Let's do it. I'm ready. You're ready. Granger's ready. The thighs are ready. So let's get going. Love it or shove it, brought to you by Granger. Antonio Brown will play for the Texans this season. Love it or shove it.
So Brown posted on his Instagram, Big 4X soon, hashtag call God, with a photo of him in the three uniforms that he's played in. Deshaun Watson commented on that and said, glory.
Well, it would listen. First of all, there's going to have to be a resolution of his case.
Right.
And then there's going to be a suspension. And then you have to decide if a team is willing to go through all that and do that with him. I can't love it yet, so I'm going to have to shove it.
He's so talented, too.
He's so
talented.
Once
you get him on the field and put those blinders on and just look at his football. But too many other things, I'm shoving this.
He doesn't play running back, so the Texans won't be interested.
Boom. Nicely done.
Bubba, what do we got?
Dalvin Cook will hold out. Love it or shove it.
I'm going to shove it. I don't think he does. Last year of his deal, 1.3 mil, said he's not going to do any activities until he gets a reasonable deal. So if the Minnesota isn't going to play along with that and it's up to him holding out or not, I do not think he holds out. I shove it.
Yeah, I'm going to shove this too. Now, I think it's worth noting that a lot of the rules in the new collective bargaining agreement that apply to guys holding out don't apply to rookie contracts.
Exactly.
They only apply to veteran players on veteran contracts. So not subject to some of those same extremes, but I think he's had to have seen publicly too much of the writing on the wall. If this initial wave doesn't work, I have a feeling this is one where it winds up back in camp.
Yeah, again, he's clearly outperformed the contract. Only Christian McCaffrey had more yards, scrimmage yards per game than him last season, but there's no leverage for him. There's none. Nope. So I'm going to shove the holdout.
Bye-bye.
All right, love it or shove it. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Zion Williamson should be on the cover of NBA 2K21. Love it or shove it.
Why not? Love it. Hell yeah, put him on there. I mean,
you don't have any problem. He barely played half the season.
So what?
You're not going to win Rookie of the Year.
You ever seen the movie Trading Places?
Yes.
Get in there and sell.
Yeah,
that's the whole point.
Everyone,
it's not to the best player be on there. It's who's going to buy the most games.
Wants to see him, man. Put him on there. Go ahead.
Love it. I'm all for Zion being on there. You're about selling the product.
Listen, I just had to say that to like cover my bases and give you guys an out. He should absolutely be on it. I still think he should win Rookie of the Year. He's not going to, but he should in all this one. The new PS5, by the way. Dear God.
There you go, Bubba.
I need a cigarette.
What's next?
All right, of the three New York quarterbacks, Josh Allen faces the most pressure this season. Love it or shove it.
All right, caveat, asterisk. We all know, and then the Buffalo fans will say he's the only true New York quarterback, but the other two teams, even though they play in Jersey, are called the New York Jets and the New York
Jets. So Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold, and Josh Allen. I absolutely love this because he's on the best team. He's on the best team, and the team that always wins the division just lost their GOAT.
Yeah.
So they're in a great position to make a move right now. No other team of all those other two teams, I think, are looking to win their division, or we think are in position to win their division. Buffalo is.
I absolutely love this. In fact, I'll take it way farther. I think there's only one other quarterback that may be under more pressure this year.
And you're going to say Baker
Josh
Mayfield.
Allen. That's Baker Mayfield. And the only difference between the two of them is that all the people that drafted Baker are out of the building now. The people that drafted Josh in that first round are still there, but they have put up a team around him, and they basically said, go do the thing that we drafted you to do.
The more and more I've sat with it, I really don't know if I agree on the Baker point anymore in a lot of this, just because I think he's already a better quarterback than Josh Allen is in a lot of this, but Josh Allen has a playoff team around him, and it's only going to highlight some of the things that have been deficiencies for him going along with this. So I absolutely love this one. Josh Allen, by the way, of those three, 50-1 odds for MVP voting. Sam Darnold, the next closest, at 100-1. Daniel Jones at $125-1 on this one right now. So Danny Dimes could be good bang for your buck right there if you're looking for long odds.
Bubba.
All right, we got Love It or Shove It, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. James Harden is the best active player in the NBA without a championship. Love it or shove it.
I mean, two come to mind for me.
I mean, I'm going to shove it, Giannis.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Giannis is the other one. You could make an argument his teammate in Houston could have that title, and Russell Westbrook.
I mean, I think of the two, James Harden, just because of his offensive prowess, you probably have to give him the nod as the best player on that team.
Absolutely, but he is a Sam's Club shooter. Better discount by volume.
You taking either one of those over Giannis, though?
No, but I'm saying, but this is why I'm shoving it. You could make the argument for Giannis, absolutely. And you could also say, you know, as an all-around player, Mr. Triple-Double might be better.
I don't know if I'm ready to go that route. Giannis might join Kareem and LeBron James as the only players in league history with multiple MVPs before 25. So I feel like any answer that's not him, it probably just faking it for the sake of radio.
Let's get to this next one. I love it.
Torkelson is the least intimidating name for a number one pick. Love it or shove it.
Spencer Torkelson.
Again, from Arizona State, was the number one pick by the Detroit Tigers in this year's draft, which the first round was a couple of days ago.
I'm going to shove it because I want you to read some of these other names. Like Jay Berwanger.
Jay Berwanger, Gary Glick, 1936 NFL draft.
Yeah, Jay Berwanger, first overall pick in the 1936 draft, and the first Heisman Trophy winner ever, Jay Berwanger.
Jared Goff.
Right.
Bob Boozer. Come on.
Charlie Trippi, the first overall pick in the 1945
Hall of Famer Charlie Trippi.
I'm sorry, right away, Greg Jolly.
Jolly is
as least intimidating as you can get, right?
Why are we putting Humpty on this list? Why is our pal Humpty on this list? Rick DiPietro.
Maybe you know him, he's a sweetheart.
I don't know.
I mean, DiPietro's not – what's unintimidating about DiPietro?
I'd say just because Jolly is on that list, there's no way I have to shove this.
Bubba, take it home.
All right. Love it or shove it. Brought to you by Grainger. For all the ones who get it done, there's Grainger, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, plus 24/7 customer support and product specialists, always ready to answer any question. Call or visit Grainger.com.
Well done, Bubba.
I just want to say Jay Berwanger one more time.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Napa Know How.
Father's Day knickknacks, that funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
For more on the discussion of what that summer was like and what the documentary is going to be like, we're delighted to be joined now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line by the guy who I badgered before a lot of pregame and postgame questions for a few years in St. Louis, Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa. Tony, always good to hear from you. Good to catch up with you. It's sort of fun to look back at that summer now and reminisce about what it was and in some ways what it wasn't, but most importantly, the joy it brought so many people.
Well, it was an amazing from day one, actually. I think one insight was because of what Mark did in 2 months the year before, 97, right, that in spring training, as you know, the first day he was asked, you know, can you break, you know, Maris and Ruth's record from the first day of spring training. So he carried that and had that amazing opening day and then proceeded to go, and then the competition with Sammy. But I've had a lot of teammates on that ball club say when they're asked their most exciting moment of their career, and they'll say 98.
And along those lines, because McGuire, what he had come off the year previous, as you just explained, so there was a lot of hype around him. At what point during the season, Tony, did you go, oh, wow, okay, this is not only a home run race, but a home run race for the ages, getting Sosa involved?
Well, the first part, Mike, was just – you know, Mark's part of it. You know, Sammy burst on the scene and then became, you know, that thrilling duel. The first part was just, you know, Mark, as a rookie in 87, you know, he had this amazing timing thing where he could hit for power. And then as he improved the hitter, I mean, he really improved his stroke and became a 300 hitter, really smart about the adjustments with pitchers. It looked like the sky was the limit for him as he went into it, because a lot of things were coming together for him as a professional hitter and then the powers of concentration. You know, once Sammy got there, I'd say probably, you know, sometime, you know, maybe June, when you realize, wait a minute, you know, this is for real with both of them. And that's, that's only 2 months in. So for 4 months, we knew that it was going to be a contest and it was a thrill to watch it.
And Tony, I'm curious, because you mentioned the media brought that up almost immediately, and certainly everyone felt it. Was it something that was talked about much for you guys in the clubhouse that was actually spoken about?
Well, among us, as we got into it, you know. But, you know, Mark, as you may or may not know, you know, Mark is basically a shy guy.
Very.
And is not an ego guy. And, you know, some of those Oakland A's teams, you know, it had a lot of guys that were – front and center. You know, Mark was in the club. I was just laughing. He, you know, he loves comedians and going to comedy shows. So, you know, Mark would not get into the conversation. You know, he just wasn't. He was going to go about his work. That's one thing. He had this amazing discipline actually from the first day of his career till the day, you know, whether it's the way he eats, the way he works out or whatever. But he was going to go about it one day at a time. I'm going to take the spring training, get ready for opening day, and then go 162. So we were discussing it, especially in the second half of the season. But Mark, you know, we just wouldn't be a part of it. You know, it's just not something he was just, yeah, I just got to go out tomorrow, get some good at-bats and help us win.
How did it compare, though, Tony? I know when, like, a pitcher's throwing a no-hitter in the dugout, nobody goes near him. So when McGuire is getting close, forgetting even the matchup with Sosa, getting close to the record, how were people treating him in the dugout? Were they not saying anything like you do to a pitcher, or were they cheering him on to get it?
Well, no, it was like 180 degrees different from a no-hitter, because it was an everyday thing, and it was building, and, I mean, from the day, you know, from the moment he showed up at the ballpark, you know, everybody felt you hit one a day. How many are you going to hit today? And, and you know, had fun with it. You know, and like I say, if you check with any teammate over as many years, they will tell you that Mark was right there with the most popular teammate, because he never had the ego trip and stuff like that. So he would have fun with it and then go to work. But, no, they were, you know, they were pushing him, praising him. I think, and Trey would know this, when the game was over, if we lost – and he had a home run. He didn't really want to talk about the home runs publicly with the press, because we got beat. That's what he was taught. If he hit a home run and it was meaningless, he didn't really want to talk about it. He wanted to talk about, you know, Brian Jordan or Ray Langford or, you know, somebody that had done more to win the game. So it was never about him, but the guys had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, he just played along with it, but he just relentlessly went about his work.
He certainly did. As Tony La Russa was with us again, he was with Mark McGuire when he was a rookie in Oakland, then brought him to St. Louis as a rental. And before we get into anything else, I do have to tell this one story. Tony, you probably remember this. After he was coming as a rental player, and then he fell in love with St. Louis and he signed a contract. And his first day after the press conference, or the first game rather, after that press conference, where he'd signed the contract to stay in St. Louis, he went into the batter's box and everybody at Busch Stadium just stood and applauded. He had to get out of the box. He's laughing because he knows this story. And I think it was the first pitch at that at bat after he'd signed that contract. He hit a home run to left center field that had to be over 500 feet, and it dotted the I on the scoreboard over Mark McGuire. And he had a sense of the moment that I don't think I've ever seen anybody athlete have before.
Yeah, well, I just think that's part of the story, because that's why I mentioned the spring training thing. The expectations, the attention, they didn't also all of a sudden appear, you know, after the All-Star break. I mean, they were there from day one, but he had developed this amazing ability, you know, the ability that we all would recognize in a great player in any sport, where he could focus and concentrate on playing the game and basically tune everything else out. In fact, before we quit, let me know, because there's a great example that, the last three games of the season, but that was, you know, the one you pointed out about his first appearance after he signed the contract. But that was Mark developed a concentration and a focus that was the only way that he could have dealt with the pressures and the expectations. I mean, he could just concentrate on it. In fact, when he was a hitting coach for a couple of years there at the end of my time at Oakland, you know, he would say, basically see ball, hit ball. I mean, that's what it came to at the moment, but obviously it was more to hitting than that.
And certainly, as we're talking to Tony La Russa here on Golic and Wingo, I think people, as we go along, it's important to remind everyone of that, because the conversation obviously also does correct involve and turn to steroids in that conversation when it comes to this home run race, but it's not to ever discount the skill that also goes into that, all the other things that you need to be. But Tony, for you, I mean, when Mark called you and apologized for the steroids and told you he was going to come clean and that part of things started to become a part of the story, what was that conversation like for you?
Well, it was very limited in the sense that part of what he did was the HGH, which, you know, a bunch of guys got into during that time, and you had to get a prescription for, so it wasn't illegal. He had a couple of years there in Oakland where we really feared that his career was going to be over because of plantar fasciitis in his heels, lost a lot of time. And so, you know, he had some of that going for his injuries. And then later on for his back, if you saw Mark in 87 and you saw what he was as he went along, you know, he became very smart about his diet. He really you know, as he got bigger, he got trimmer. You know, he quit eating fried foods and stuff like that. I know that, and I, you know, I've been a staunch defender because I know with Dave McKay, our program never allowed anything illegal that we knew, and we were not policemen. But I really believe the great majority of what Mark represented was a growth as a hitter and as a person. And he dabbled in it because he got into it in a couple of off seasons, you know, whatever the explanation is. But I don't think it had, I don't think it persisted with him, and that's why my answer is it's very limited. I think the great majority of what Mark accomplished, and in fact, later in his career, you know, I mean, he had 29 home runs his last year in 2001 with 300 at-bats because with a bad back. And we talk about integrity and that if you cheat like that, you don't have integrity. You know, Mark had signed a 2-year contract with $30 million that the organization had signed, and he walked away from it after the 2001 season. He could have stolen the money, and he said, no, I can't play to that until Mr. DeWitt, you know, I'm done. So, you know, I have a lot different perception of Mark. And to this day, if you see him, you know, he still works out. He looks great. And if his back feels pretty good, you can still hit it a mile.
Yeah. So, Tony, along those lines of him involved in what he did and Sammy Sosa as well, when we look back on that year, when you look back on that year, because of the talk of the steroids around it, does it diminish at all what that year was for Mark and Sammy?
Well, it has to, you know, and I believe that at whatever date you want to pinpoint that, you know, sometime in the early 90s, you know, with, you know, Caminiti or, you know, Jose, whoever it was, you know, I'm not going to start getting into names, and it's not the point of this conversation. Whenever it started to become apparent that there was stuff going on, that era till about the, you know, the early 2000s when, you know, they we were allowed to do testing, you know, once the union and MLB got together on it. I think that you know, that whole period's got an asterisk, a black mark, whatever it is that you have to say, look, you know, there's some stuff that happened here. Unfortunately, it was happening with pitchers too. So, you know, I forget who just mentioned it earlier. It wasn't a question of, you know, not having skill because you still, that, you know, a lot of guys bulked up and couldn't do much more. But the effect of that on minor leaguers and high schoolers is you know, it's a bad period in our game. And that's why it may be hard for some people to focus on what was going on in 98. But if you take the moment, man, it was beyond exciting. And like I say, before we leave, give me a heads up because I want to tell you the last three game story.
All right. Go ahead. Let's get it out there. Absolutely. Tell us.
All right. And, you know, and I follow FX all my life, you know, and I see, you know, the great clutch performances, you know, with those aura shot. I just watched, you know, 5 weeks of The Last Dance and marveled at what the Bulls accomplished, and Michael in particular, to me, you know, the greatest athlete competitor of our time. But going into that last weekend, you know, Mark had gotten to 62 first. And then, you know, Sammy kept coming. So we got into the last weekend, going into Friday, we're playing the Expos, and he was a home run behind. And, you know, there was, I mean, a lot of stories there about if Sammy finished the hit. You know, Sammy, very big personality, having a lot of fun with it. And, you know, the story could have been written that, you know, Matt got there first, but Sammy won the home run race. And what he did the last 3 days against Montreal, in my opinion, ranks with, in the conversation, with the greatest clutch performances of any athlete. Michael Phelps, anybody you talk to in any sport. Because against the Expos with Philippe Alou managing, and he had promised they were going to compete against almost every at-bat he took that week, and they threw a couple balls inside where he had to dodge it. He had 5 home runs, one on Friday, 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday, with everything on the line, not just doing the thing, but knowing that, you know, he won. By that time, he wanted to win the home run race. And I, in my opinion, what he did that last weekend, and he was on the fumes, was one of the great clutch performances of an athlete in any time, any sport.
You're 100% right, because he could have broken the record and not hold the record.
Right, exactly.
And that's remarkable. Right. Yeah. Tony, it is always good to talk to you. Great to catch up with you, my friend. Hope you and yours are well, and hopefully we'll talk again soon, okay?
Well, I enjoy listening to you guys. Do a great job. Thank you.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.